You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our interview with the screenwriter of Mary Poppins Returns, David McGee.
By the Academy Award-nominated screenwriter of films such as Finding Neverland and Life of Pi, David McGee, whose latest work is the sequel to Mary Poppins titled Mary Poppins Returns. David, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You know, when I list off the credits, also you're credited with writing Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day. There's only four films listed there, but I mean, that's quite a body of work that you've accumulated for yourself throughout your screenwriting career so far. And I have to give you some props and kudos to that, too, because I don't know how much I'm allowed to say necessarily, because there is currently a review embargo on Mary Poppins Returns, but I will just say congratulations, sir. I think you have yet another wonderful hit on your hands here with this one.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I'm biased and I'm not under an embargo, so I can say I think it's great.
Well, I want to start us off from the beginning, I guess, then. You know, so you're nominated for the Oscar for Life of Pi. That's back in 2012. Here mm-hmm. we are now, 6 years later. What was the process like between that and Mary Poppins Returns? How did this project ultimately land at your desk, essentially?
Well, you know, projects take a long time to get done, and there are other things I've worked on in the interim, which I hope will be coming to a theater near you someday soon. But this project came to me 3 years ago. I got a call from my agent saying that Rob Marshall had wanted to check and see if I would be interested in working on a sequel to Mary Poppins, New Adventures of Mary Poppins. And I have to say, if it wasn't Rob Marshall, I'm not sure how confident I would have been about being involved in such a thing, but he's a master of film musicals.
Yeah.
So I was immediately interested. And so I met with him and John DeLuca, the producer, in New York City. And they had sent over some beginning ideas and notes and suggestions for how the film may open. And I read those through and I was excited by them. And when we sat down, we started talking about those ideas, and it's such a relief in our business to meet with people where you feel as though they understand what you're talking about and they're finishing your sentences and you understand where they're going. And within a very short time, I knew I wanted to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm grateful to say that by the time I got in my car and started driving home, I got a call from my agent saying they wanted to work with me. So that was really the beginning of the project.
So you never had a moment of doubt, expectation, or, oh my gosh, like how, like I'm the one who has this burden to bear of creating this sequel to a very beloved Disney property. It, for you, it was nothing but just pure positivity and excitement.
Well, there's something awesome. Literally, you find yourself awed by the prospect of being involved with such a classic. I did know in my heart that Disney would not allow us to let this happen if we didn't come up with a pretty darn good story. And, cause they have, you know, an immense interest in protecting the original. And, I was excited about the prospect of working with them. And then, Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, a composer and lyricist, came on board. And so it was five of us in a room talking about ideas, and it was just such fun to start reading all the old P.L. Travers books and searching for what kind of story we could tell that would do that would honor the original and take Mary Poppins forward. So I didn't have time to be frightened, I guess.
Well, another thing too, I mean, because you're doing research, you're looking at the old film. I'm not sure if you looked at the other Disney film that was released, Saving Mr. Banks, or not.
Mm-hmm.
But taking all of this in, right, all this information that you can to try and craft the best story possible,
mm-hmm.
What I was very struck by with this particular film was how well you honored nostalgia while still making it feel like it was something fresh and new. And I wanted to ask a little bit about where you kind of came to the balance with that.
Well, we knew from the very beginning, we did not want to just rely on the original and people's memory of it in order to make our film look better. Of course, we wanted to connect our story to that of the Banks family, but we wanted to tell a new story. Everything about this is new. Our lead characters are Michael and Jane Banks as grown-ups, and obviously, well, not obviously, but honestly, P.L. Travers never wrote about those grown-ups. She always wrote about that original family.
Mm.
But we wanted to tell a story that would stand on its own and that would be grounded in an emotional reality that modern audiences would connect with. But of course, as we went along, we're also reaching back and talking about Michael and Jane and their memories of their childhood and how things have changed. And so gradually we begin to connect more and more with the original. But obviously we wanted this to be a standalone movie. So even if you hadn't seen the original Mary Poppins, you would identify with what our characters were going through.
So you invested a couple of years, obviously, into this project.
Yes.
And I'm curious to know if there was ever a personal connection to the material for you that would have you invested in, you know, such a process? Or was it just simply the idea of, you know, this is a very, very exciting project, something that, you know, has had enough time removed from the original that we can make it something fresh and new?
Well, I'm not an autobiographical writer in the sense that I don't try and put my own personality on the screen or my own life events, but it's a natural part of working on anything, that when you're trying to find out why a character does something or what's happening in their mind when something is going on, you remind yourself of things that you've been through. So as a very small example, Michael Banks has gone through some very hard times. He's lost his wife. He's raising his children on his own. And now they're struggling through the depression. And he has lost track of things and fallen behind, and he's not paying attention to the bills and that sort of thing. And one of the early questions that people were asking me when we were writing the early drafts of the film was, well, why doesn't Michael just ask for help? His sister's there. I hope he has other friends out there or someone who could help him with this. And for a while, it was hard to answer that question until one day when I just thought, well, what would I do when things get intense, when I'm struggling or trying to keep up? My immediate reaction is to say, oh, no, I'll take care of it. And it's also a generational thing. I think that my father was even more so that, oh, no, there's nothing wrong. I'll take care of it. I don't want to burden anyone else with this. I don't want them to see me as being weak or unable to take care of my problems. And I think as soon as I realized that was what Michael was going through by identifying with it in myself, I was able to write his character much more effectively.
Sure.
So that's the kind of connection that you can make with the material along the way.
Now, being that this is a musical and there are songs in the film that have to be written and they take up a large chunk of the runtime of the film,
yes.
I'm curious to know if you're working with Mark Scheinman during the writing process, or if that's something that gets incorporated later and then you have to go back and do rewrites to have the songs kind of fit in with the dialogue and the themes that you're going for. Like, what's that collaboration like?
Mark and Scott and Rob and John and I were working together almost from the very beginning.
Oh, nice.
We worked for about 4 months to create a treatment of the film. I think about 35 pages describing what we thought the film was in as much detail as we could to show Disney what we had in mind. And as we developed that, we would be sitting around in a half circle, throwing out ideas. I'd keep track of them. We'd meet a couple times a week and I'd go off and write these things up. And then I'd send them over to the others and they'd read them all. And we'd meet again the next week. In the process of doing that, we'd come to a point where I'd say, or we'd all say, I think this is where this happens, and then this happens, and someone would say, I think that's a song. And I'd say, okay, and I'd type the word song in the treatment, and not knowing yet what exactly it would be, but knowing what part of the story we were trying to advance through that song. We wanted very much to have the songs not just be asides, but really be a part, an integral part of the story. So as Mark and Scott worked, they would describe what kind of song they thought it would be, and I would listen, and I would try and describe it in this treatment. And then when we actually got to writing, we went off to our separate corners, but we were in almost constant contact, where I would write a scene, show it to Rob, he'd make some comments, then I'd send it over to Mark and Scott, and I would try to write up to the moment where I thought the song began, and maybe even write a little bit into the song, what I thought was happening, describing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically say, you guys tell me, where does the song begin? And oftentimes they'd start right where I left off, or sometimes they would jump back, you know, half a page and say, we don't need all this. This is what's in the song. We're doing that already. And I'd say, okay. And then they would make a demo of the song they were working on and send it over. I'd listen to it. It was usually fantastic. And I would then go back and alter what I had written up to this song to kind of fit with the rhythm, stepping into the song, that sort of thing. But oftentimes they were so expert in knowing where the song began that they would just cut out the parts they didn't need, and we were off. So it was an amazing process. And then occasionally dialogue comes back in the midst of the song. So they'd say, okay, we wrote up to this point. Now we want to do this here and have them talk about this. And I'd say, okay. And I'd go off and write that.
Hmm.
So it was a back and forth from the very beginning.
And like you said before, you immediately had excitement working with Rob Marshall on this project. And from the sound of things, it sounds like that process definitely was something that was, it met your expectations in terms of that collaborative process working with Rob.
Oh, absolutely. And more. Rob is brilliant. He's got an amazing ability to see what potential is there in what you've written and gently X out the parts we don't need so we can move more quickly into the parts that matter and encourage you to add a little more of this and that. So he was with me along the whole way. And then when we finally had a script with our first round of songs, our kind of first draft of everything, he pulled together a crew of amazing actors to help us out, along with Emily Blunt and then Manuel Miranda. And we read the whole thing over the course of a week. We essentially, we didn't put it on its feet. We read it around a table and rehearsed it to see if it worked so we could hear the whole thing before we even thought about going off to film it.
Wow.
And then by then I knew we had a great, great project. I was very excited. And it was just awesome to listen to it.
Yeah, a few questions I'd like to ask any writers that come on the show here. So how long from the time that you began the project to the time you turned in your final draft, how long was that process and how many drafts ultimately did you go through? It almost sounds like you guys were constantly writing and rewriting a lot throughout the whole process, it almost sounds like.
Yeah, it's harder to define, drafts. I think our treatment took 4 months. Our first draft took another maybe, 4 or 5 months. So 8-9 months, getting approval from Disney for the treatment, for the story we're going to tell, and then creating that. And then we did our reading, and then we had another few months to get it ready for pre-production. And then we rehearsed it for 8 weeks with the cast.
Wow.
Which is an unheard of luxury for any kind of film. Even for a Broadway musical, that's an incredible luxury. So we had seen the whole thing on its feet yet again. That whole process until we started production, we started in the fall 3 years ago. By the spring, we were talking about the reading, and by Christmas of that year, we were done with pre-production. So I would say that period was maybe a year and 3 months, something like that.
Wow.
And okay. 4 months, maybe a year and 4 months. And then 6 months of filming, and the rest was post-production and little tweaks and an incredible amount of work on the animation, which is both beautiful and exhausting to think about making.
I can only imagine, especially nowadays when that form of animation is in such rare supply nowadays. I can only imagine.
Absolutely, yeah.
What for you was the hardest scene to write, and what was your favorite scene to write?
Boy, that's an interesting one. The hardest scene to write, and I don't want to give anything away, but the hardest scene to write is one that ultimately didn't end up in the film. And that's because I didn't want to be too sentimental or mawkish. I don't believe that people in their real lives let you into their emotions that easily. Mm-hmm. Even those you're close to, and particularly these characters. So we needed to give our audience some sense of what Michael Banks was going through in the aftermath of losing his wife and about to lose the house and all these things.
Was it a heartbreaking or a relief to lose that scene?
A relief. Tremendous relief. And all I'll say is I tried to write versions of it, and it never felt honest to me, and it never felt real. And I always ended up kind of ending it with some sort of joke or something. And then finally I said to Rob, I don't know how to do this. This isn't what Michael would say. And at which point Mark Shaiman called me up and he said, because it's a song.
The place where lost things go, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, in this case, it was the conversation, the song he has up in the attic.
Oh, yes. Gotcha.
And so Mark said, this is what songs do, is they take us into those emotions, those heightened feelings that you can't express through words. And he said, why don't we have a swing at it? And I said, oh, gosh, please do. Go. And they wrote what I think is obviously a heartbreaking song. So is Lost Things. But just beautiful song that takes us into his mind in a way that dialogue would never have worked. So that's the hardest scene. And I don't have a favorite scene. I love so many moments in this film. I am so happy with so many moments in this film. So many moments. I've seen this film four or five times, finished, completed, still make me cry. Still make me laugh.
Yeah.
Still make me smile. So I don't, I'm not even gonna.
The whole thing. I have said to a couple of people, I would like to know the type of individual who walks out of this movie and is like, is not grinning ear to ear, is not feeling great. Like,
yeah,
I need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's,
they started in a bad place.
Yeah. And then also too, do you ever get writer's block? If so, how do you deal with it? Because it almost sounds like to me on a project like this, while there was a great deal, it almost sounds like there was a great amount of time, and it didn't seem like you were ever rushed or pressured
right.
to get this done. It doesn't sound like so. Did you ever encounter that on this project? And if so, and if maybe not on this particular project, in general, for anyone that's listening that might be a writer, how would you deal with it if you did?
Well, I have three half answers to that. One is no, I didn't really ever have writer's block, although as I just said, I got stuck in trying to figure out how to do a scene.
Sure.
But usually that means you just have to keep, you know, working at it. The second thing is, I sit down every day and write something, even if it's, I don't know what to write, because that keeps you going. And I've called it yelling at the page, but I don't care what you call it. The idea is if you're having trouble writing, write about why you're having trouble writing. You know, I can't do this because I don't know where I'm headed with this, because every time I try to write this scene, it makes no sense to me, because Michael would never say these emotions because it's a song. Of course, it's a song. You know, you figure it out by talking it out with yourself. And if you talk it out on paper, at least you're writing something. So that's really.
And you never know what also could come of that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You might find something else along the way that you didn't expect. So that's my main guide to this sort of thing. And the third, very briefly, thing is I sit down at a certain time every day and I do something, and I get up at a certain day and I stop doing. And so if I didn't get it on that day, I don't beat myself up, you know? So that's my strongest advice, I guess, is just, you know, it's persistence more than anything.
Sure. I don't know if you're allowed to tell us, but what's next? I mean, you've had a couple of sizable hits on your hands here, and you were saying before you were writing some stuff that may or may not be coming, but you're always working, it sounds like.
I'm always working, and there are always a handful of projects that I'm in various stages on. The one that's been announced that I can talk about is I've been working with Stephen Schwartz, the the composer of Wicked and Godspell and many, many others, the Pippin and many others, on a musical about Hans Christian Andersen. So that's my next, I hope that's the next one coming to theaters near you, or maybe one of the other ones will beat it there, but at least that one I can announce.
Well, we really, really wish you a tremendous amount of success and gratitude, honestly, with this movie, because I do believe that Mary Poppins Returns is the kind of film that this world needs right now at this time, especially over the holiday season. I can't think of a more perfect movie for during this time. So thank you very much for taking the time to sit with me today. It was definitely a pleasure.
Thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Absolutely. You have a nice day.
You too.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the screenwriter of the film Mary Poppins Returns, David McGee, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, CastBox, and now newly on Spotify. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts to let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and support. And if you're feeling generous, head on over to Patreon, where for $1 minimum a month, you can get some exclusive podcast content from us, including reviews for Mary Poppins, the original film, and Saving Mr. Banks for the month of December. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.